What's up, Baddie Bees? I'm Brianna, mom, wife, serial entrepreneur, and host of the Badass Basic Bitch podcast. Each week, I sit down with a seemingly ordinary woman who's doing extraordinary things, and I get to share her story with you. So let's go. Buckle up as we're going to get real and dive into the shit nobody talks about. Welcome to the Baddie Bee Club.
To recognize how ingrained that behavior is, how we were indoctrinated and influenced to please, when you are a caretaker, when you make sure that everybody else is happy and happy with you and taken care of, then you're a good woman, then you're a good mother, then you're a good leader. And we need to eradicate those paradigms so we as women can live into elevated paradigms that are far more healthy and helpful than the ones that we have been.
Welcome back to another episode of Badass Basic Bitch. On today's episode, we have Tracy Litt, who is a certified mindset coach, spiritual advisor, best-selling author, TEDx speaker. The list goes on and on. But Tracy is also the founder of The Litt Factor and creator of Mind Magic, which is helping to serve thousands of women across the globe. Tracy, thank you for joining us. Today's episode is going to be all about the power of mindset. But first, why don't you give us a little background on who you are and the Litt Factor.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is going to be a great conversation. I'm the founder and CEO of The Litt Factor. We are a personal growth and potential company that focuses on visionary women leaders and entrepreneurs. You come to us when you are ready to do the inner work to take yourself to the next level. And in doing so, you generate the next level of your joy, your impact, your wealth, and your holistic success, because you'll never grow your impact and business faster than you grow yourself. And that's the work that we get to specialize in.
I love that. And what brought you on to this journey?
Oh, my soul was dying in my corporate job, much like many of us.
That happens? No.
Yeah, right. And I was courageous enough to answer that call after being paralyzed by fear for 2 years on, you know, is it too much of a risk? What if I suck? What if it doesn't work? All of these very normal things. Who do I think I am? Et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, from leaping and creating everything I've been able to create and generate, it was just a calling to do the same for other women that are here to do really meaningful work in the world and create a legacy that outlives them.
And when did you write your book? Because you have a book called Worthy Human.
Yes.
You are the problem and the solution. And I actually love that title. I think it totally sums it all up.
I agree. Thank you. Yeah, that was 2019.
Okay, in 2019, what brought you to write that? And I think, like, what does it mean? I feel like I know what it means to be the problem and the solution, because I have done a lot of reflection where I'm like, yes, you are part of the problem. And in order to fix it, like, you, it has to come from you, not anybody else. But, like, what exactly does that mean to you?
It means that you are the cause of the effect, and everything that you have in your lived experience is coming from you. So you can stop blaming and justifying and coming up with reasons and looking at everybody outside of you and your industry and your spouse and your, or lack of spouse and your kids and all these other things, and go within and recognize the freedom and the power that you've had all along.
Yeah, I like that. Something that I was taught at a pretty early age, and mainly due to therapy, is that when something is going bad, when a relationship is bad, when you feel like you're on the wrong path, there are many players of why that is happening, why a relationship is bad, why you're having struggles or depression or whatever. And you are one of those players, right? Like, it's not always your fault, but it's also never not your fault.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is that it's not so much fault. You know, our society likes us to live through the lens of fault. It's more about radical personal responsibility to recognize that whatever happened along the way that landed you where you are, it is now your responsibility to heal, grow, and expand, to choose your response and to choose your own adventure.
I love that. That's a huge call out. I really appreciate that, because it definitely makes sense. Like, even for me, leaning towards using that word faults, right? And it's like, well, I mean, you know, more along the lines of recognizing it and taking responsibility to ensure that it doesn't continue or that it's changing versus more of a victim mentality. So I really like that. So what stops us from taking that level of personal responsibility if we're talking about responsibility? Like, what's preventing us?
Well, two main things, really. Worth issues and fear. And a misunderstanding of fear, really, right? Yeah. I mean, the core being worth work that you have to do, because if you're already playing the I'm not enough game all the time, the last thing in the world your system is going to allow you to do is put your hand up in the air and go, yeah, I'm responsible for all of it, because it internalizes that as another thing that you're not enough as, right? Another thing that can impact your value. So we don't want to take radical personal responsibility, because if you haven't done the work with me yet, or the work in personal growth yet, to raise your consciousness and understand what's really going on here, then your ego and your system internalizes it as, oh my God, that's your fault and there's something wrong with you. So the opportunity to do your worth work, the lack of you embracing your inherent wholeness prohibits taking radical personal responsibility, and our fear response. Because once you do take radical personal responsibility, well, then you have to show up and do the thing. And your fear response is like, oh no, then you're going to have to change and be visible and do things. And as much as bad as you are listening, going, no, but I want it, I want it, I want it, it doesn't matter. Your mind and body are actively working against what you say you want 24/7, 365.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally resonate with that of feeling worthy. I don't know if you're into the Enneagram or you know it, but I'm an Enneagram 3, and our main core value is worthiness. And so for me, I've struggled a lot, especially with my upbringing, to feel like I was worth enough for someone to love. And I actually struggled with this for, I don't know, a good 30 plus years before I started to take that radical personal responsibility and say, I need to be worthy enough for myself to love. It's not about being worthy enough for this or that. It's about myself. And once I started to make that transformation and have that mindset of I need to fix myself for myself, was when I really started to have this incredible growth of confidence in my own self and my personality and all of these things. So I can really resonate with that.
Absolutely. You know, and I think it's so beautiful. You share it so freely, and we need more of that, you know. And I too struggled with not feeling smart enough my entire life, so much so that it was like in my identity. I dropped out of college. I was like, nope, don't want to do this. And, you know, was super rebellious in high school and skipped second period and didn't care, not because that's really the truth of who I was, but that's who I believed I was, because I was carrying the worth wound of not feeling smart enough. And, you know, I think it's really important of service to all of the beautiful listeners that you have to recognize that if you are listening, you have wounds that need to be healed. Please don't kid yourself. Please don't block it out. Please don't minimize it. You want to take yourself to the next level, live your best life, manifest A, B, C, D. I love it all, and it's all available to you, but not until you heal through so that you can embrace your wholeness.
100%. And, you know, I've got a lot of close friends who I look at, one in particular where it's jumping from one relationship to the next, one relationship to the next. And like for me, I got out of a very high conflict, toxic marriage. And after that marriage, I needed to heal. There was, and I'm still honestly healing. I'm remarried. I'm expecting my fourth child, but I am still going through my healing process. And I have been divorced for almost 3 years. And I think, you know, it's so easy to not face the hard things, because by the way, healing is really hard. It is hard work. I have to show up every week. I have to do these activities. I have to cry a lot. I have to express a lot of emotions, and I have to face the things that happened to me and continue to happen to me and tell people about them and admit that they hurt me. And that is really hard to do as a human. And so I love the fact that you have this take of like, it is super important to allow yourself that healing process, because when you heal comes growth. Like hard things allows you to grow. And now as a partner, as a mother, as a friend, as a business partner, I am showing up in a totally different perspective and mindset because I've allowed myself that healing versus taking my traumas to the next relationship, to the next interaction, you know?
1,000%. And you're really nailing it, because that's why there's so much I want to say. We are in a consciousness revolution. Our generation is here to heal, grow, and expand, to actually show up different so that things can be different for our generations, for our collective consciousness, for our collective frequency. That is our divine responsibility. And what you've experienced and what you're working towards, which I am, and everyone who's in, you know, every client I have, every student I have, it's recognizing that you are the common denominator. So you just said you show up different for everything. Therefore, everything's responding to you differently because you're the variable that changed. You're the only thing that ever needs to change, right? And you have agency over yourself, you know? And it's so beautiful, because the other thing about healing, growing, and expanding that is important to know is that is our actual purpose. As spiritual beings having a human experience, which is science, it's not an idea, it's not woo, it's science. It's to recognize that our actual purpose then is healing, growing, and expanding. Because as we do that, we raise our consciousness, we raise our frequency, we change out the way we see the world, the way we see ourselves, the way we engage with people, we open our hearts, all of these beautiful things go on. And I feel like that's an important thing to note, because so many of us are under this misconceived notion that our purpose is what we do and our purpose lives outside of us on some hill somewhere and we have to go find it. And right, and all that does is really keep us constricted and searching when we need to go inside, where all the answers already are.
Right, right. And I think that also brings me to the next point of this emotional suppression. And I know that you talk about this a lot, especially in your book, in all of your speakings as well, is that when you, and I always tell my children this, is like, it is okay to feel emotions. It's okay to express them. You have to allow yourself to go through that journey, because if you don't, what happens is it just goes down inside, deep down in your belly, and it sits there and it manifests and it rots. And like when you let something sit, what happens? It rots and it starts to turn toxic and poisonous for you. And that is the same as our thoughts and our feelings. And so what's the best thing to do? Well, the best thing to do is make sure that you take out the trash. And in order to do that, you have to go to the trash can and throw it out and take it out and make sure that someone else takes it away, or that you physically get rid of it or express it. And I think there's a huge thing for this emotional suppression, which I can attest to, is like the control issues. So I had an eating disorder for almost 2 decades. And it started when I was 7. And a lot of that was because I was not able to communicate my emotions. I was not able to process them. I did not have the skills to process them, or it was looked at as not something that was acceptable in my family and not something that was talked about. And because of that, I started to control, but I controlled myself, my food, my intake. And I think, you know, that is a more radical approach. I think there's still some truth to that to people who have trauma or who have been hurt or who have had their like a mistrust. And instead of going through that healing process and allowing yourself to talk about it and express your emotion, you just carry it with you to like the next interaction or the next relationship where you have, you know, some control issues. So my question for you would be, when that happens, how does that block us from being the best versions of ourselves and meeting that success? And two, what are ways that people who are doing this can recognize it and help themselves stop doing it?
Yes. So the answer to the first question, it blocks us in two main ways. The first way is it's blocking you from actually being fully self-expressed. Okay. So the opposite of expression is suppression and also repression. So repressed is to not even know you have shit that you need to deal with because it's so deep down and you're just like, nope, not going to go there. And suppressed is when you're consciously like, nope, don't want to feel it, shush it down, go be busy, right? So either of those is the opposite of what we're seeking for you, for all of us, because that's what we deserve. That's what we deserve as spiritual beings having a human experience, to recognize that the only thing that's wrong with your emotions is your judgment of your emotions. Emotions inherently are actually neutral. They are to emote is human. Emotional expression is human. Emotion is energy in motion. It needs to leave your body, which leads us to our second way that it blocks you. It's lowering your energetic resonance tremendously. So you're doing all of these manifestation efforts and you're drinking kale juice and you're meditating and you made your vision board and you're like, whoa, where are my results? If you are emotionally repressed or suppressed, which everyone is, unless you're actively letting it up and out because you've worked with me or you've worked with somebody else who helps you with an emotional healing process, you are actively lowering your vibration and your frequency because you're so emotionally congested.
Oh, that is fascinating. So are you saying like literally, like, because if you had like this high-pitched voice and all of a sudden you're having a lower pitch voice, are you saying that there might be some correlation of like you're suppressing emotions to have like a lower frequency? Is this a literal thing?
Well, not so much like in your vocal tone, because you could have someone who just like, meaning when I say frequency, I'm talking about your energetic resonance.
Oh, got it. Right. I'm so literal. I'm very literal.
No. It's a good question, right? No, it's little, you know, In the truth that we are spiritual energetic beings having a human experience, right? We are energy, which means we are vibrating all the time. You don't start to manifest and generate. You're doing it all the time. You just need to learn and get intentional about it, right?
Yeah.
Because we're always emitting an energetic frequency, an energetic resonance, right? The way that we vibe. So whatever vibe we're putting out, right, is what we are generating back to us.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like that bounce back.
Yes.
In a sense. Okay. That makes way more sense than vocal cords. When you're running a small business, every second counts. So when I found out my friend was still lugging all of her products to the post office to ship, I had to move her to Stamps.com. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping quick, easy, and cost-effective. More than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Stamps.com gives you access to all of the post office and UPS shipping services you need right from your computer. All you need is a regular computer and printer. No special supplies and no special equipment. You're up and running in minutes, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. Plus, Stamps.com seamlessly works with Shopify, Amazon, Etsy, eBay, and more. Stop wasting time and start saving money when you use Stamps.com to mail and ship. Sign up with promo code BATTYB for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code BADDIEB, BADDIEB. The next thing that I want to talk about, because I think there's a lot of relation to this, and I definitely have done this a lot. I don't do it anymore because I'm actively working on setting boundaries and not people pleasing.
Yay!
I know. Thank you. Yes, it's been, you know, I did it about 3 years ago when we filed for divorce. It was all about like focusing on myself and fixing myself and getting myself into a place where it's like, I have so much life to live and I need to be the best version of myself. But first I have to figure that out. So still on that journey and I'm enjoying it. But people pleasing as a leader, because I've been a leader, manager, leader for over a decade. How can people learn to move past people pleasing? Because by the way, I feel like a lot of my listeners always talk to me about people pleasing and being peacemakers. So how can they move past doing this? What's your advice there?
Come work with me. I'm going to give you a real answer, yes. But I'm also very, as you can tell, I'm very direct, and I don't need to know you to love you. I don't need to know you to believe in you. And when you're asking something like, how do we really recover from and move through and liberate the energy and the behavior of people pleasing, that is part of the healing of the wounds process. It's part of the growth process. It involves healing. It involves mindset work. It involves regulating your nervous system. It involves different levels of awareness. It involves getting in touch with the next level of you who doesn't people please, and how does she show up, and how does she respond, and how does she hold herself and carry herself, right? So I really mean that, because I have had so many beautiful success stories of women who no longer people please, that are truly on the other side of it, no longer perfectionist, no longer procrastinate, no longer hide, right? Because they are becoming the next level. Now, for right now, you know, something to understand is you're not born a people pleaser. You learned it. A little bit of it is genetics, right? It is actually passed down because we come from a long, I mean, listen, women were oppressed. We're still working on it. Look at what's going on right now. It's insanity.
Seriously.
So to recognize how ingrained that behavior is, right? How we were indoctrinated and influenced to please, when you are a caretaker, when you make sure that everybody else is happy and happy with you and taken care of, then you're a good woman. Then you're a good mother. Then you're a good leader. And we need to start to question and eradicate those paradigms so we as women can live into elevated paradigms that are far more healthy and helpful than the ones that we have been. This is also a call for you to do your worth work, because the reason we people please is because you're getting your external value by pleasing and being available and doing things. So now when I tell you to say no, you're like, but if I say no, then they're not going to love me. They're not going to approve of me. And then I'm not valued. And then I'm worthless. And we go down this rabbit hole, all of which is a lie, yet it's very real until you do the work around it. Right?
Right. It's real within your reality.
Correct.
In your reality, right. It's real, but like it's right. It's not, you know?
There are so many other ways to live. There are so many other choices to make that are so much more healthy and so much more helpful for you, right? Where you really deserve to use your voice, to say no, to not be responsible for other people's responses, to, you know, recognize that your wholeness is your birthright and it actually cannot be impacted. It's important to know that not everybody was supposed to like us in the first place, but we walk around with this notion that we're supposed to, like, what? Like, that's insane. I tell my clients all the time, if everybody likes you, you are not being your fullest expression. Don't even.
Yes.
Don't even go there with me. That's you being a contortionist and chameleoning depending on what room you're in.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And something that I always say on the podcast too is being yourself shouldn't be hard.
Right.
And I always felt like pre-start of this journey, being me was exhausting because I always had to show up in a very certain way. And now being me is just, It's every day. It's just, I wake up and I'm just me. And
yeah.
It's so freeing.
Thank you. Freeing, and it's fun and it's easy and you're not thinking about things. You're just being.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I literally just show up and I do what I do and that's it. I don't have to analyze how I'm going to answer every single question or how I'm going to interact in every single event or networking that I go to or conversation that I have. And to me, it was absolutely exhausting. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of times now when I have conversations and I can read micro expressions of like, oh, I know this bitch does not like what I'm saying and I just don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And it's okay because not, like I said, not everybody's supposed to like us. Not everybody resonates with everybody. And that's actually a beautiful thing because that means that people are being in their fullest expression.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. Okay. So for people pleasing, I do think that it's still hard to me, it was hard to recognize that I was doing it. And I really started to work on my boundaries of what, and this took a lot of work. Like, it's a lot of work to undo all of the fuckery for the past 30 plus years between trauma and society and family members and relationships and all sorts of things. It's a hard commitment. But anyway, I think for me, the best thing was like, I figured out what was important to me. And it wasn't like a list of 10,000 things. It was a small list. And I just started to say, if my relationships, if my conversations, if the things that I'm doing, if the things I'm taking on do not support these things or conflict with these things, then I need to say no. And it was really simple to say, and you can start off with like three things of like one, two, three, and then just go based off of that. And then I started realizing how hard it was to say no. And then I started reflecting on the why. And it all came down to the same reason, because I care what that person thinks of me. And as soon as I started to change and warp that mindset of like, does this fill my own bucket? You know, I put me first was when I started to easily practice that and see things on a different point of view. What are some other tips that you recommend, easy tips that you recommend that people can do to do something similar like that?
Like recognize when you're people pleasing? I have a great one.
Yeah.
Notice every time you feel like or use the word should or shouldn't. That's the gateway to identifying your people-pleasing tendencies, which then drive your shame and guilt, emotional addictions, right? So anytime you're like, well, I really should go meet them for dinner. And you pause and you go, wait a minute, should, that means people-pleasing. Hold on, what's underneath? Do I want to? It's a choose to or choose not to. That's the replacement. It's like, I should. Okay, wait a minute. What makes me feel like I should? Well, you know, like I feel like I owe her because last time, da, 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 da. And you got to be self-aware, right? And grow that awareness. Be like, wait a minute. That's not a reason to do it because I'm going to go. And here's the thing about people pleasing that is so interesting is what a self-punishment it is. Because when you people please, you end up doing things that you don't want to do that are out of alignment. So it depletes your energy and it makes you a martyr and resentful.
Yep.
Right? So nobody's getting a good version of you and you feel like shit internally. So it's like, I'm sorry, what are we doing this for again? Right? So really, really recognizing where your shoulds are and where your shouldn'ts are and allowing yourself to evaluate, do I choose to do this or would I like to choose not to do this?
That's like such an easy tip. And I still do that. Like even tonight, oh my God, literally, I was writing my friend and I was like, I really should go to this musical tonight. I just don't want to. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm not going. I already canceled.
Good.
But at first I was like, I should go. I paid it. You know, it's our date night. And then I was like, you know what? I don't want to. And then I just canceled it. But I could see someone who's not used to or familiar with like, I need to think about these things. That word is very triggering in the sense of like, oh, trigger word, wake up.
Yep.
And reflect. Yep.
There's a ton of self-discovery underneath your shoulds, a ton. You'll start to realize, you'll start to hear it's your mother's voice. It's the way your grandmother was. Like you'll start to uncover all kinds of origins of your shoulds and your people pleasing if you pay attention to that word.
So a little bit off topic, and you had mentioned this in our conversation, 10, 15 minutes ago, and you didn't use the word imposter syndrome, but you used some keywords that sparked my interest of like questioning your own, should I be here? And I can relate to that as well, coming from a very humble upbringing. Probably I only went to college because I was on a full ride of scholarship for lacrosse, or at least a good college. And so when I started my own company and it started being extremely successful, I had what was called imposter syndrome. However, I like your take on it because you're like, this is not real. And I need to know why you feel that way.
Yes, yes, yes. It's so interesting. It's a very polarizing conversation, which I like to have, because when I can disrupt and debunk something that's been subscribed to forever, I get very excited about it. I did a similar thing with the Expander Parenting new paradigm that I introduced that we can comment on after. But ultimately, imposter syndrome is fundamentally flawed and complete bullshit at its core. Number one, you don't have a syndrome. There's nothing wrong with you. And when we recognize the power of language and how it affects the psyche, the mind, and the body, and you use a word like syndrome, which is medical, it's clinical, it's diagnostic in nature, you are connecting your identity to an actual issue that you don't have. That's the first part. Number two, you're not an imposter. You're just doing stuff you've never done before, right? I'm going to go into that in a minute. So I'm going to come back to that. The thing that burns me about imposter syndrome is that it has become normalized through its commonality. And woman to woman, it's like, oh my God, I have it too. My God, I have it too. And then we turn around and we commiserate on it and we use it as a reason why we're not showing up. I can't be visible. I have imposter syndrome. And then we end up, it's like a crutch and an excuse, but it's really accepted because like everybody has it. And the way that women identify with imposter syndrome, how many businesses market to imposter syndrome? And I'm not look, in the market business, make all the money in the world. I love all of that. But it starts to push us all down, right? Now we're hiding, we're shrinking, we have imposter syndrome. So now let me explain what's really happening. So just to give everyone a little bit more background on me, I am a science and spirituality teacher. I am a licensed hypnotherapist. And after I left corporate to start my business, I became obsessive about understanding fear and risk and the biology and the system when we change. Because when I sat in that 2 years of fear of paralyzation, right? Like I'm in, I'm doing it, I'm leaping on Monday, Tuesday, I'm like, the hell you are. Wednesday, I'm in, Thursday, I'm out, right? All with that, the mind fuckery in my head. After I leapt, I was like, okay, I'm so curious. How can I be so pumped and excited and convicted even, and so paralyzed simultaneously for moving forward? So then I started my journey of researching obsessively fear, risk aversion, risk perception, biology, the biology of fear, all that stuff, which is one of my TED Talks on fear. So here's what's really happening. You don't have imposter syndrome. You have a beautifully, perfectly functioning wiring system. Because the mind body is here and wired for survival to keep you the same. And when you go do something you've never done before, like speak on a stage or start a business or write a book or coach somebody who you deem is higher level than you, right? Or it's time for you to speak at the board meeting. All of those things trigger your fear response. And then your fear response literally throws up thoughts of self-doubt and inferiority in an effort to get you to attach to that thinking and sit back down and not do the thing. You don't have imposter syndrome. You have primal wiring. You have a system that's trying to keep you safe and the same. So I'm going to pause here. What are you digesting about what I'm saying right now?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is super fascinating. I think there's a lot of truth and I can resonate with the, you feel like your feelings are your feelings. And you can feel fear and you can feel out of place. But sometimes if you don't quite understand why, you try to resonate your own whys to those feelings. And I could totally see a lot of people, including myself, feeling fear and doubt and whatever else it is, being like, it must be because I don't belong here. I'm an imposter. You know? And so I totally resonate with that. And I love what you're saying because I've recently started having those feelings again because my business is becoming successful again. And I'm scared. I'm scared to make the leap. I'm fearful. I'm doubtful. I've got one half of my body in, one half of my body out. And I'm starting to resonate those fearful feelings with the reasons why, and I'm creating my own, but I'm actively saying like, uh-uh, girl, like you're a boss bitch. Like you deserve this. You worked hard. Look how much work you've put in. This is not about piggybacking off of anybody. It's not dumb luck. Like you're not an imposter. And right. I have to actively say those things to myself. So I think it's super fascinating.
Thank you. It is fascinating. And we have a lot of missions here inside the Lit Factor, you know, and we're here to really, really elevate women. I'm one of three girls. I have three daughters. And it's so disempowering to identify with imposter syndrome. It really, really bothers me. It's like you don't have a syndrome and you're not an imposter. You're doing something you've never done. You're expanding. You're going beyond your zone of familiarity. It's not that deep.
Yeah.
It's really not that deep. When you understand the practices of regulating your nervous system, creating safety so that you can get outside of the zone of familiarity, you learn how to use your mind like the tool that it is to drive the thoughts you need to think, to show up and do the thing you need to do or feel the way you want to feel. And you understand how to use practices so that you can play the expansion game, right?
Right. And I like that. In order to remove yourself away from that is identifying the feelings, connecting it to why you think you feel those feelings, and anything that has a negative connotation, debunking it with why they are not driving those feelings. Like, for example, I didn't go to a Ivy League school. It's like, okay, well, guess what? There's a lot of Ivy Leaguers that aren't successful. There's a lot of people who haven't even graduated college who are some of the top richest people in the world. So, you know, I think that I totally understand that now. You know, when I was 26, 27 and made my first $1 million, like I definitely did not understand that. I was like, holy crap, when is everyone going to realize I don't belong here? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I'm faking it.
Well, yeah, but the other part of it too is learning what it means to constantly shift and edit and uplevel your perceived identity, right? Because if at 27 you had done some identity work, you would have been like, yeah, I am a young, awesome powerhouse. And this makes total sense that it's happening for me because that's, I see myself in that identity.
I definitely wish I knew you back then. I could have been a totally different woman.
You know me now. You've got it. You've got to come into my magic. What you're talking about with your business growing again, like this is what we're doing in there. It is just like the most epic community of highly conscious women that are doing meaningful work. And it's an inner work playground. It's unbelievable.
And you had mentioned before we got into that topic about the expander parenting, where you're taking this mom guilt and building an empire and how they don't mix. And I 100% agree with that.
I mean, you and I both on our missions and obviously of service and meaning and wealth building and all these gorgeous things, we cannot build 21st century empires with 20th century parenting. The good mom paradigm, that was for our grandmothers.
Right.
Not us.
Exactly. It's totally different. And it's hard. Now, I feel this is the one part of me that feels like my upbringing benefited me because my mom was a single mom of five. She was a working mom and did that bitch work hard, man. She went back to school, got her master's while she was working full time, and she was a single mom of five. And guess what? There was no such thing as online courses. She went to physical school. And if I was sick, guess what? I was going with her to her physical school. And she was getting like a new bachelor's and a new master's and just so she could have the career. And I mean, the work ethic was really powerful, but also she showed up to my sport events she did her best that she could to like bring me. She was a lot of like negotiating for rides and stuff. But to me, I think I learned, that was the best thing I learned from my mom is, you know, you can work hard and still show up as a mom and be present. And I don't know if my mom has mom guilt. Maybe I'll interview her one day and ask her about that. But in my present life, I don't have mom guilt because I prioritize my children and I parent them in a different way. And I outsource a ton of things that regular moms and wives do, right? Like literally, I have this chef that comes in from Dinner Elf. It's only an Austin thing. She comes in and she cooks 3 to 4 meals a week and she preps it. And guess what? I outsource that because that saves me 4 to 5 hours a week. And I spend that with my children. And it's just like this different concept.
Yes. Well, you're in it naturally doing that. And it's magnificent because that's exactly what it is. It's allowing for help, prioritizing yourself, your time, your energy. And think about what you're giving back. When we ask for help, we allow the support and then we invest in the people that are giving us that help. What a beautiful cycle of give receive, right? You're putting money back into somebody else's business. Yeah. Somebody else's prosperity. Like, yeah, amazing.
Well, and the other thing too, that's super important is that I do not hide the fact that I do any of these things. Do not hide the fact that I have a cleaning lady on a weekly basis, that I have this person come in and cook us delicious food, or that I have an au pair. I don't hide it because I want other women to know who are looking at me thinking I am doing it all to feel like they are not good enough. And I get that a lot of like, how do you do it all? And I'm like, oh, I don't do it all. Like I might be orchestrating the band, but I am not physically doing it all. And I'm investing my money into somebody else so that I can invest my time into something or someone else. And that's just how it works for me.
That's such a gift. And you really showing that and sharing that with all the women around you is such a gift.
Yeah. It's not a way to brag or say, look at me, oh, I've got all this money. Because even when I didn't have any money, I still outsourced a lot of these things because it allowed me the space and the opportunity to invest in myself other ways and other people. So I think that's also important. So what piece of advice would you give the listeners if they could only leave with one piece of advice besides to go work with you? Because everyone already realizes that, and I'll just say it. I have so enjoyed this conversation and I don't want it to end. But if people could only have one thing from you today, what would it be?
It would be, well, I have a message and then I have a how, because the how is critical. Information and inspiration is lovely and useless if you don't apply it. And I'm very interested in transformation. So the first thing is to go back and really, really allow your body to hear and start to accept when I say that you are inherently whole, worthy, lovable, and totally enough. That is your birthright, period. You can stop believing the lies and playing the I'm not enough game, which is causing all the shrinkage and the hiding and all the other things that are interfering with you actualizing everything you desire and very, very deeply deserve. So I need you to let that in. The how is I would like to invite you to start reconnecting to your body, start to slow down. It's in that reconnection to our body and our slowing down that we build the most profound strength in our ability to observe ourselves and our ability to non-judgmentally observe ourselves, to understand what it means to notice, ooh, I feel that trigger. Ooh, I'm not doing the thing I said I was going to do, right? Ooh, there's that feeling that I've been suppressing for 25 years. So my invitation is to slow down and connect to your body. And I invite you to do that through breathing, like really intentional, deep breathing. Anytime you change the rate, depth, and pattern of how you breathe, you're activating your vagus nerve. You're dropping more into your parasympathetic state. You are resting, rejuvenating. And in that space, you connect to yourself.
I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Where can folks get a hold of you? Where's the best place?
Yeah. So let's start with whatwouldshedo.net. So if you go to whatwouldshedo.net, it's a beautiful gift that I have for you. It's a 3-part audio training, connecting with the next level of yourself and me teaching you how to leverage embodying her now. So that's whatwouldshedo.net. And everywhere else is the Lit Factor. So you can go to thelitfactor.com and it's LITT, 2 T's, and the Lit Factor on social media.
Tracy, you are one badass basic bitch. Thank you for such an enjoyable conversation. And I'm literally sad that it has to end.
It doesn't. You need to come in my
room. I'm going to come over and be quiet.
You have to. I'm telling you, mind magic is it is such an extraordinary community and place. Every female leader and entrepreneur needs to be there.
As always, thank you for listening. Check us out on Instagram at @badassbasicbitch. And thank you to Saw and Sign, our production studio. We'll see you next week.